The first freedom listed in the American Constitution is freedom of religion. That's not surprising when we consider how many of those who settled and founded this country came so that they could worship God freely in their particular tradition. Today, anti-Christian persecution is rampant in many places around the world. The Voice of the Martyrs writes, "Persecution isn't your typical warm and fuzzy Hallmark Christmas topic, but it's the reality faced by millions of our believing brothers and sisters around the world." Todd Nettleton is the vice president of the Voice of the Martyrs and the host of their radio show, and he is well informed on the different aspects of anti-Christian persecution going around in our world today. I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Vocal Point. And in fact, Todd has written an article to which we'll link. It's on the Christian Post, talking about this problem. Todd, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me. It's good to be with you.
Sure. Now, you and I go way back. I mean, I remember interviewing you about 10, 15 years ago, whatever, various times at the National Religious Broadcasters. Bottom line is you've been monitoring anti-Christian persecution for years. Is it getting better? Is it getting worse? Or is it getting about the same?
You know, it's kind of hard to answer that question, but I would say it is, in many cases, it's getting worse in terms of more Christians are facing persecution. But I would say the silver lining in that cloud is part of the reason for that is there are more Christians. There are more Christians in places like Iran and North Africa and even northern Nigeria where Christians are persecuted. So there are more potential targets, and therefore there is more persecution. But like I say, part of that is a good news story that the gospel is spreading.
Christians in Iran. That's hard to believe.
The fastest growing church in the world is in the Islamic Republic of Iran. So, yes, it is a little hard to believe, but it is absolutely a good news story of gospel spread.
Tell us details.
Well, one of the amazing things about the spread of the gospel in Iran is part of what is driving it is the Islamic government. In fact, I've had Iranian Christians point to Ayatollah Khomeini and say that guy is the greatest Christian missionary in the history of Iran. And I look at them and say, well, wait a minute, he wasn't even a Christian. How could he be the greatest Christian missionary? And they say, listen, he showed people the true face of Islam. And what you have in Iran is you have an Islamic government that for 45 years has said, we are running our country according to Islamic principles. It is, if it's in the Quran, that is how we're going to run our country. If Muhammad would have done it that way, that's how we're going to do it. And 45 years later, you have a country where the economy is in shambles. You have one of the highest drug addiction rates in the world. You have a country that is kind of in ruins. And so the people look at that and say, well, if this is what it looks like when you do things the Islamic way, what are the other options? What else could we do? And so there is an openness for other ideas. And in fact, most Iranians today have rejected Islam. Now, they may not say that. They may still say, I'm a Muslim, but they don't actually believe it. Many of them have become atheists, but also many of them, and there are different estimates, but I think it's pretty safe to say over 1 million Iranians are now followers of Jesus Christ. And part of it is what the government has been doing for the last 45 years and labeling it as we are an Islamic government, we're doing things the Islamic way, and the people are fed up.
Are there actual church buildings that you could go and visit in Iran, or how does this work?
There are not any open church buildings left that are holding services in Farsi, in the national language. There are a few churches for Armenian people. They are very small. In fact, I think there are very, very few of them even left that are open and allowed to hold public services. So this is happening in a very underground way. It is happening in meetings, in houses. It is happening through broadcast and internet ministry that is reaching people for Christ. And then once somebody is reached, if they're reached through a broadcast ministry or reached through an online ministry, There is a little bit of a process to try to filter out, okay, are they genuine? Are they legitimate? Are they a spy? So they typically will meet one-on-one with a Christian for a number of weeks or months before they're ever welcomed into a service with more than one person, because the risk level is so high. So it is very much a underground church, but it is also very much a growing church in Iran.
This is amazing. Well, how do you even get these statistics? That, you know, a million, perhaps.
One of the great things about Voice of the Martyrs, having been doing this work for more than 60 years is, or not almost 60 years, not quite 60 years, we are connected with many of the different streams of Christians in Iran, the different housework church networks. And so we're able to get statistics through them. We're able to hear the stories of how the church is growing. It's one of the benefits of having been in this business for a long time.
Now, have you personally been there, or I'm sure some of the people associated with your group have been in Iran? I find this so fascinating because it seems so incongruous with, you know, what we've, you know, understood about Iran in the last, as you say, 45 years.
I have not personally been to Iran. It's on my bucket list. I hope I get to go there someday. I have, however, met with Iranian Christians in other places where they can visit and I can visit without either one of us putting ourselves in too much danger. And so I've had the chance to interview numerous Iranian Christians over the years and just heard amazing stories of God's work in that country, how God, it seems like everywhere that you have Iranians gathered together, there is a work of God that is going on. It really is a beautiful thing. And like you say, it is kind of counterintuitive. It's like, wait a minute, they had an Islamic revolution. They have an Islamic government. The government has done everything they can to slow the growth of the church. And in fact, even since this summer, since the war with Israel, they have tightened down against Christians. The charges that Christians are facing now are not, oh, you had some illegal books, you had some Bibles, or, oh, you were meeting secretly and it wasn't authorized. Now they're being charged with espionage. They are seen as a friend to Israel, as a friend to the United States. And so what they are doing is seen as treason. And so it is a very high price that our Iranian brothers and sisters are paying, but they continue to share Christ, they continue to spread the gospel, and they are willing to pay that price.
That is amazing. All right, you and I are recording this discussion in the days leading up to Christmas, and you basically, in your article that we'll link to, say, in effect, Christmas is a predictable flashpoint for anti-Christian violence. And go ahead and take that wherever you want to in terms of wherever in the world.
Well, you're absolutely right. If you hate Christians and you hate the gospel and you hate the stories of the Bible, what better time to make sort of a statement about how much you hate Christians than when they are gathered together to celebrate the birth of Christ, the birth of our Savior? And so in recent years, we have seen attacks around Christmas time, and in many countries, it is common for Christians to gather either on Christmas Eve or Christmas morning for some type of worship service. And so that becomes a target. And we have seen attacks on churches in Nigeria and Iraq and Egypt and the Democratic Republic of the Congo just in recent years. Last year, Christians in Bangladesh, in one particular area of Bangladesh, were kind of received an open letter in the days before Christmas that said, basically, you should say your goodbyes to your family before you go to Christmas celebrations because you will not be coming home. We are going to put a stop to this. And so this is a time where Christians are targeted. That means it's an important time for those of us in free nations to be in prayer for our brothers and sisters who live in hostile areas and restricted nations.
You know, it seems to me that the examples you just gave, the very nations that you listed, it's an Islamic threat. But we also know that there's the threats in the communist countries. But I do find that fascinating.
It is. And some of that is because in many of those countries, there is a traditional Christian population. I think of the Coptic Church in Egypt, which is a Christian population within the country that is legal. So there are church buildings. They are full of people on Christmas Eve or Christmas Day, and that becomes unfortunately, that becomes a target for some of these attacks. Like I say, if you hate Christians and hate Christianity, other than Easter Sunday, Christmas is like the time that you want to make a statement. And so it is a time, unfortunately, where Christians are targeted. And, you know, I remember several years ago being at a church service in Nigeria. It was not Christmas. It was just a regular church service, but they had members of the youth group posted outside of the church building just to keep an eye on things, make sure nobody's coming, make sure there's not a car bombing, make sure no cars pull up close to the building. And, you know, like I say, that was just a regular Sunday. Now imagine how that is on a big holiday like a Christmas or an Easter. And really, in a lot of countries, Christians have to approach these services with that kind of caution and that kind of sort of one eye on their surroundings. You mentioned communist countries, and in most of those countries, it would be illegal. It is illegal for Christians to gather. And so they don't have the sort of large scale Christmas Eve service or worship service that you might see in an Islamic country where there is a large Christian minority.
Well, it's almost like the United States is in its this little bubble or something. Well, I guess Europe too, and Australia. In other words, the Western world. But I mean, it seems like there's hot spots everywhere around the globe, just about.
You're exactly right. More than 70 countries that Voice of the Martyrs has identified where persecution is a regular part of following Christ. It's not an aberration. It's not sort of a one-off. It happens often, it happens commonly, and Christians know when you choose to follow Jesus Christ, you know, if you live in one of those countries, that there is going to be a price to be paid. And so they willingly accept that risk, they accept that price. And as you say, we don't typically have to think that way. In the U.S., we are in the minority, and we need to understand that.
And you say 70 countries, and there's what, about 180 or 190 or maybe 200 at the most countries around the world. So it's a significant population with, you know, worldwide.
It is a very significant population. As I, you know, I've heard numbers, and I don't know the exact figures, but somewhere over 200 million Christians live in those countries where they could be persecuted. And so, and like I say, for them, it's a normal part of life. In fact, I think often of one of my coworkers was in India, and he had gathered with some pastors in India, and he had been told these are pastors who have been persecuted. They've been through a lot of hardship. And so he was asked to give them a greeting, and he just said, hey, well, how many of you have been through persecution? And not a single hand was raised. And his host, he kind of looked at his host like, wait a minute, I thought these were persecuted pastors. And he said, well, you need to ask your question a little bit differently. He said, you know, raise your hands if you've been beaten. And like over half the hands went up. If you've been beaten for being a Christian, raise your hand. But the thing is, they didn't think that was really remarkable. They just thought, well, when you follow Christ, you get persecuted. That's what happens. They didn't think of it as abnormal. They thought of it as, of course we've been persecuted. Of course we've been beaten up. That's what happens when you follow Jesus in our context. And we just don't have that mindset in our American Christianity that it's going to cost us something. We typically don't think that way about our faith.
Todd, what is the most dangerous country in the world to be a Christian? And by the way, we have 1 minute remaining.
You know, I think the hardest place to be a Christian, I think, is North Korea. And the reason for that is because in North Korea, the leaders are seen as divine beings. There is a worship expected of the leaders. And so if you worship Jesus, it's not just a matter of, hey, that's a foreign religion. It's treason. It undermines the government of North Korea. And so I think that's the hardest place to be a follower of Christ.
Wow. Okay, we have 20 seconds to wrap things up. And your website is vom.org. So what would you like to say in closing about praying for our brothers and sisters around the world at Christmas time and beyond?
As you're celebrating Christ's birth this Christmas, I hope you will remember to pray for our persecuted brothers and sisters around the world, and do connect with us at vom.org. We'd love to send you the free Voice of the Martyrs magazine. Again, vom.org.
Todd Nettleton, thanks so much for being with us, Todd. God bless you.
You're welcome. Thanks
okay.
for having me.
Thank you now. Bye-bye.